right. We welcome everybody to the Second Court of Appeals this morning. We have two cases set on our 10:30 docket. We will likely go from one to the next without a break since we just have the two. I understand everybody's checked in and we've got the time allocation set. Don Smith will be arguing for the appellant in our 10:30 case, with Michael Stewart and Nicole Bunn to argue for the appellees. And I understand your time has been set with the clerk. We will get that set up in just a moment. So we'll call the first case, John Koustafis, excuse me if I've mispronounced that, versus Pinnacle Health and Texas Operations Management.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Dawn Smith, and I represent the appellates in this case. I first want to give the court a brief background of this case. This is a medical negligence case involving nursing home abuse and neglect. Ms. Koustafis is an elderly patient, and she was admitted to one of the operating company's nursing homes. On August 28, 2012. She was there for stroke rehabilitation, and she remained there for about a month until September 24, 2012. This was Arlington Villa Retirement Community, and this is owned by Pinnacle. So the issue on appeal today before this court are whether or not the management companies should have been dismissed in this case, and or whether or not the court abused its discretion in dismissing the management companies while allowing the facilities, the nursing homes, those claims to proceed. All right. So in the report, Dr. Rushing sets forth his opinions as to Arlington Villa. Ms. Koustafis sustains injuries there, including deep pressure ulcers to both of her buttocks and on one of her lower extremities. Those are discovered when she's taken to the nursing home, to the hospital, Arlington Memorial Hospital. She goes to a couple other facilities, and then she is subsequently admitted to Heritage House. Heritage House is another defendant. It is a skilled nursing facility, and it is owned by Texas Operations Management Company. So the two management companies at issue before you today are Pinnacle and Texas Operations Management. Texas Operation owns Heritage House, and Pinnacle owns Arlington Villa. Ms. Koustafis was at Heritage House for almost a year and sustained injuries during the time she was there after she was admitted to the hospital on March 2nd, 2014. So she was there from March of 2013 through March of 2014. She suffered severe infections and dehydration. She was found to have respiratory insufficiency, and she died on March 17th, 2014. So at the trial court level, we filed an expert report after filing our petition. The amended petition was filed on January 26, 2015. And the expert report was timely filed on April 13, 2015. Now, this was the very first expert report. Now, we went before Judge Chupp on the issues of whether or not the report was a good faith effort under the standards of Chapter 74 as to the nursing facilities and also to the management companies. During that argument, Mr. Powell was present at that argument, and also I was present at that argument by phone. And we made our arguments to Judge Chupp. It was very clear that Judge Chupp did not understand the law as it relates to vicarious liability in the context of summary judgment based on certified EMS and also a case out of Fort Worth, which is TTHR Limited. I noticed that TTHR Limited was authored by you, Justice Gabriel, and actually the part of the judgment that was affirmed by the Supreme Court is relevant in this case. The Supreme Court found that in that case, where the plaintiff alleged negligence by the doctor and provided a sufficient report on all of the elements as to the doctor, who was an independent contractor, when there was enough information in that report to inform the defendant of the specific conduct at issue, which is required under Chapter 74, and also provide enough information for the court to conclude that the claims had merit, that was sufficient for the court to conclude vicarious liability against the operating company. The operating company and
the operating company employed those doctors in that case. Couldn't, when you say Judge Chupp didn't understand vicarious liability, couldn't Judge Chupp just have been relying upon the fact that in this case the operating company, Pinnacle and Texas Operations, didn't employ any of the people that you have an expert report that alleges that they acted with medical negligence?
Well, that's a good question, Justice Gabriel. In the context of respondent superior and vicarious liability, it doesn't have to be an employer relationship. It has to be either an employer-employee or an agent-agency relationship. And the key in determining whether or not a vicarious liability theory applies is the right to control the activities of the wrongdoer. So in Certified EMS and in TTHR Limited, it seemed like the Supreme Court has made it very clear that as long as you can plead one theory of liability against a defendant, then all theories of liability must survive. So in the context of this case, our report is sufficient. I will submit to the court that it's sufficient on direct liability and vicarious liability.
Maybe vicarious liability of the nursing home that employed or their agents are the ones that the expert report may support medical negligence of. But direct me to something in the report that says that Pinnacle and Texas Operations somehow or another controlled the actions of those the report supports medical negligence for.
Your Honor, I believe that the report does indicate that they manage and control the facility, and I can find you, I believe that it is on page 2 of the report, which is Appendix C. It indicates that the two operating companies are the management companies for Arlington Villa and Texas Operations. And it goes into detail later on about the incidents that occurred and how those occurred at the two facilities. So I think I'm not getting exactly to your question. So the purpose of Chapter 74 is to simply put the defendants on notice of the conduct at issue, okay? Thank goodness we don't have to do any more than that, because we are not allowed to take any discovery, not conduct any discovery whatsoever, until we have filed an expert report. So at this point, we know, based on our research, that the management companies own and control the activities of the nursing homes. This is how nursing homes are set up, and this is the way they are managed. However, we have not had the opportunity to take the deposition of a corporate representative of the nursing facility or a corporate representative for the management company. So we're prohibited from doing that. And under Chapter 74, we're not required to do that because we only have to allege the specific incidents at issue. So let me give you an example. So if we were to have filed this case and not alleged liability against the management companies, because we haven't had an opportunity to conduct sufficient discovery as to the management companies and their control over the companies. We've only done our due diligence to make sure that those entities are owned and together operate the nursing home facility. So we don't name these operating companies. Then we take our discovery and we find out like we almost always do, that the management companies are in direct control of all of the budgeting for the nursing home, all of the staffing for the nursing home, any kind of budget cuts for the nursing home, they're responsible. So we find that out in discovery later on and develop that aspect of our case. Well, but at that point, we didn't name the management companies, and now the statute of limitations has run, and now we cannot bring that entity into this lawsuit. So the Supreme Court has made it clear that as long as we allege vicarious liability against the management companies, then we have put the defendants on the specific conduct at issue to put them on notice of the problems and issues where we are alleging negligence. And as long as we do that, the claim must survive. And the reason that is because the statute of limitations problems that can come up. So as to vicarious liability claim, the element of control is the most important aspect of proving vicarious liability, but we can't figure out exactly what those aspects of control are other than ownership until we do discovery. So a plaintiff, such as Mr. Kostafis, who's filing a case on behalf of his mother, is in a situation to where he must, exercising due diligence, pursue all viable claims so as to preserve those claims throughout the course of discovery. Now, if the management company chooses to, later on in the case, they can move for summary judgment, stating that we haven't proven the element or haven't presented sufficient evidence on the element of control so as to hold that company responsible for the liability of the acts that happen at its own nursing facility. That's something that must happen later on. But under Chapter 74, we must pursue all available and viable theories of recovery.
Do you have any case law authority? I know that the two cases that you've cited to us, but in those cases, in fact, the vicarious liability was based upon a direct employee of the company, not a layer removed, which is what we have in this case. Do you have any case law authority for the situation that we have in this case?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe that the Gardner case, which is 274 Southwest 3rd, is a case that's directly on point. There, the management company or owner of the facility where the doctors were conducting a lumbar epidural procedure, those doctors, there's nothing in the record that indicates that those doctors were employees of the management company. And generally speaking, doctors are independent agents. So, for example, at a nursing home, the physician most of the time is an independent contractor that has his liability separate and apart from the hospitals. So it's not really the employee relationship, Your Honor, under a theory of vicarious liability or respondent superior, we have to show control over that agency. But you can't do that in the context of an expert report other than showing that the management company owns the facility where the incident happened. That's the only thing that we can do before we conduct discovery. And I've really contemplated this, you know, how can we get more information to provide to our expert? So that the expert can opine.
Well, the expert could opine. I've worked in these nursing homes, and I know that the nursing home facility has control over the doctors, but we don't have that in this report, do we?
Well, I think that is a good point, Your Honor. I think that even under the circumstances, we have sufficient information here to say that the management companies were directly liable because there is testimony, and I might be able to address this better on rebuttal because I can find it exactly in the report to answer your questions, but on page 6 through page 7, there is actually a title, Standard of Care Management Companies, and it says Defendants Pinnacle and Texas Operations had a duty to Ms. Kostafis to act as reasonably prudent owners, operators, and management companies of their skilled nursing facilities under the same or similar circumstances. The standard of care as to each defendant is the same in the context, in this context, as to each owner slash manager defendant, because they were operating skilled nursing facilities for residents like Ms. Kostafis.
Where is the opinion as to the breach and the causation then?
And it goes on. On the occasions and questions, there's a lot, so stop me if I'm giving you
okay.
too much.
That's fine. We can read it. I appreciate it.
Well, it says further, the standard of care as to each defendant is the same for the facilities providing the care. So the standard for the ownership companies is the same standard as the standard for the management companies. So basically, when you're alleging the same standard of care as to the same defendants, those issues are addressed in the report. And he goes on and provides a summary of the breaches of standard of care and failing as to the hiring, monitoring, evaluation, and supervising employees and staff charged with the care and supervision of skilled nursing patients.
But Judge Chupp found that he didn't have any qualifications to give those opinions as to the operating companies.
He did, and that brings me to a good point, Your Honor. If Judge Chupp, now, and this is on a direct liability theory, right? So under these circumstances, under a direct liability theory, Dr. Rushing certainly has to have qualifications to testify or opine as to the management companies and their acts, omissions. He must talk about whether or not he's had similar roles. I would submit to the court that this report is sufficient on that issue because he has been a chairman of the bylaws committee at Presbyterian Hospital in Dallas from 1989 to 2010. And the report also indicates that he's provided guidance and offered opinions regarding the appropriate oversight, protocol, regulations, and training by management companies and nursing facilities, such as those involved in this case. That's on page 4 of the report. So, at a minimum, let's say...
Your time is up. I'm sorry.
Okay, thank you.
Is your question answered?
Yes, okay. Thank you.
All right, and let's add to Ms. Bunn's time an extra minute, please, since we went a little bit over. We'll call Michael Stewart for argument on behalf of Pinnacle, I believe.
May it please the court, Your Honors. And I believe our joint defense issues will be the same, so my arguments would apply equally to both management companies for your consideration, as I believe Ms. Bunn will on our behalf as she finishes up our argument. I believe it would be most judicious for me to direct your attention to what I think is probably the most salient and important point, and that is where the court ended, and that is the consideration and concern about whether or not the report sufficiently identifies qualifications for Dr. Rushing to provide anything, because that is really the horse before any cart in any of these opinions that could be come into question. The court very definitely found that he was not qualified, and the court inquired here just a moment ago about what possibly in his report could have established his qualifications to provide these opinions about management companies, because the court also identified the deficiency in his report that fails to provide an opinion about control. Appellant's position appears to be that Dr. Rushing could somehow by his experience have known about this type of operation structure and control. Unfortunately, what he has failed to do in his report, as the court has inquired about, is state any type of experience or qualification that would support that. What he did say, I think the language is very important. Let me just quote this one sentence, which was just referred to by opposing counsel, and that is, he states that I have provided guidance and offered my opinions. Okay, it does not go on to provide any context, and those of us in this field who've gotten to pose Dr. Rushing dozens of times will know that there is not a fleshing out here to identify a single nursing home or a single management company, which is not listed in his report, to say, I consulted for XYZ management and provided them my opinion. What I would contest this states to the court is that he's provided opinions about management companies within the context of being an expert, and his opinion that they're good or bad or failed some duty one way or the other. What it does not establish, I propose to the court, is any qualification as a gatekeeper for giving an expert report. For the court is well aware of the established case law that if we don't have an expert to have an expert report, then the rest of the procedural safeguards about wanting extensions or the way in which we interpret the context of the report are really out the door. And I think that's really the most important initial step for the court's evaluation, is determining, is there something within the four corners of Dr. Rushing's report that would provide the court, under an abuse of discretion review, something to say, you know, Judge Chupp didn't get it right. Judge Chupp didn't think about this guy's experience on page 2, page 4. Because I propose to you, other than the statement that I just read from you on page 4, that states, again, I've provided guidance and opinions regarding. It doesn't say opinions or guidance to, on behalf of, being retained by, because he's never been a medical director.
But doesn't that argument only go toward potential direct liability claims as opposed to those that do relate to the actual hands-on physician treatment?
That's a great inquiry. And it could potentially accept that the rest of the report, which is the next part of my focus, is the rest of the report does not provide, again, a qualification or an inference to show I have an opinion that they're providing that control to put us in the vicarious liability boat. And that would be my response, Your Honor. Is the second issue is the failure of the report to provide us with some basis or background or just an opinion, even if it's a notice opinion only, an opinion stating that I think, right or wrong, this is how a management company is set up, right or wrong, this is how I think the management company exerts its control, right or wrong, and this is how they employ people. The employees are actually all employed by the direct operator, the license holder. The management company can't, by its own license with the state, you know, hire the people who are giving the actual care. That's the license holder. That's a whole another ball of wax for us. But again, I think it's an important distinction, because I would concede to the court, if we are in a direct employee liability situation, I do not contest the myriads of court holdings that discuss, hey, if someone is a direct employee of a company, then they can plead vicarious liability and the company is not getting out under an expert report. I'm not here to debate that or in any way dispute that. I do think it's important for us to focus our attention, though, on the gatekeeper question as held by Judge Chupp, and that is finding that Dr. Rushing, clearly by his own report language, hasn't established himself to have a knowledge base or any experience being part of nursing home management companies, however he defines that. And therefore, we don't step into the next question about potential vicarious liability protection, because the second part kicks in, and that is he hasn't provided in his report anything to establish a background or experience or a knowledge base or even the assertions of control. The court inquired as to where in this report it would show that somehow that these management companies exerted control, and I would submit to you, I don't find that. I think what was referenced by opposing counsel was simply the statement, again referenced on page 2, I believe, she said, it's they're the management company. Well, again, and this court is well aware that the Court of Appeals is not allowed to fill in the gaps here, nor would the trial court judge be able to fill in the gaps to say, well, as a management company, then you could do A, B, C, D, or you should, or et cetera. It's just not fleshed out by him. And I think that, in and of itself, provides the real distinction for why isn't there this potential control issue which would save them under a vicarious liability scenario. That is the basis of my presentation. If there's something that's still a question or concern, I'm happy to address it. Otherwise, I'll turn it over to my esteemed colleague.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Stewart. Ms. Benn.
Good morning, Your Honors. I would like to address one thing that the appellant brought up and make a clarification. She told the court that the management company owns and operates the facility, and that's not correct. In the record, if you look at record page number 12, number 9, it's their own petition. And on their own petition, they say that Keller S&F LLC DBA Heritage House. That is the owner of the facility. The Texas Operation Management is the management company. There is nowhere in their own pleading that says they owned or operated the facility. And appellant's counsel said that there's no way to tell because we can't do discovery yet. And that's not actually accurate. There's public records about who handles the operator's license, who is the owner for the facility. So I wanted to make sure that the court was aware that in the record itself, there's no allegation that the management company owned or operated the facility. I echo Mr. Stewart's arguments with respect to Mr. Rushing's qualifications. I would point out and echo that there is nothing in the report that discusses the role of a management company in a nursing home. Justice Livingston, you were correct that there's no direct liability discussion in here about the management company, and I think what appellant is doing is hanging their hat on the vicarious liability claim. They're saying under the Potts case, well, if it's we've alleged vicarious liability, so that by that includes everybody. And if you look at Dr. Rushing's report, on the record, it's page 44, it's page 6 and 7 of his report, it says it doesn't address direct liability, doesn't direct the standard of care for the operation company, the management company. It doesn't direct causation. It says our standard of care is the same as the facility. So basically, they're asking you to look and see what their claims against the facility are, assuming vicarious liability, which we contend they cannot do without establishing a causal connection. But in and of itself, Potts says even if there's vicarious liability, the report still has to meet the standards. It has to show there was a sufficient information on a standard of care, a breach, and causation. And this report does not do that, especially with respect to my client, the actual owner of the facility and the nurses providing care. Because Dr. Rushing, in his report, on the record, it's page 41, and in his report, I believe it's page 3, he says, with respect to my client, Mrs. Kasoufis was admitted for hospice care. Hospice care is very different than normal regular nursing care. The standard of care is different. In hospice care, they are not so worried about measuring someone's input and output because they have been diagnosed as terminally ill and it's comfort care measures only. They are not worried about measuring for keeping malnutrition issues at bay. They're providing comfort care only. And nowhere in Dr. Rushing's report does he differentiate the care provided by my client, even if this were assuming vicarious liability. Does he mention the difference between nursing care provided by a nursing home rehab center, someone who's broke a hip and is expected to go back home or is there for long-term care, versus someone providing hospice care? And in that respect, the report is insufficient and deficient. So even if this court were to assume that the vicarious liability, the connections established, POTS applies, this report applies to management companies, it's still deficient because it does not adequately set out standard of care, how they breached it, or causation. Specifically with causation, if you look toward the end, it says, in the end, under hospice care, if the facility had monitored her fluid intake and urine output, which you don't do in hospice care, Mrs. Kasoufis would have suffered less in her final days. That doesn't give us specific information. It takes nothing into consideration that as a hospice patient, she's on pain medication. They are providing pain relief, any morphine, anything like that is completely conclusory and not supported by any facts whatsoever. So even if this court were to say, yes, appellant, okay, we'll go with you on the vicarious liability claim, the report in and of itself continues to be insufficient. And I would say that the trial court judge decided correctly in saying that there was an insufficient report in dismissing the management company.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Benn. All right, Ms. Smith.
Thank you. I wanted to answer one of the questions that was posed. The TTHR LTD case, limited case, that involved physicians that were not employees of the hospital as well. So I think under the circumstances, we're making an identical argument in the context of a nursing home and a management company. Now, I think one thing that hasn't been addressed today is that Judge Chupp found the report deficient in certain areas against the nursing home, but granted 30 days leave to amend to address those issues. Under Scoresby, at a minimum, what Judge Chupp should have done, and he certainly abused his discretion in not permitting the plaintiffs to amend the expert report as to the management companies. Now, as we have argued here today, under a theory of vicarious liability, if the report is sufficient as to the underlying entities, then the management company or that entity that has control over the facility, those claims must survive under vicarious liability. Counsel has been arguing that there is nothing in the report as to even the direct liability against the management companies, and that's simply not true. There's an entire page that addresses the direct liability. So there's two scenarios where we must be allowed at a very minimum to submit an amended report, and Judge Chupp erred in not allowing that. If the underlying report is sufficient, then on vicarious liability, the management companies are required to survive on a motion to dismiss. So, based on the record and the clerk's transcript, Judge Chupp was very clear that the report was deficient on certain areas, thought it was sufficient as to the first management company because of the pressure ulcers, but he said, no, I need some more information as to the infections and the dehydration. I think that his opinions needed to be more sufficient. He also found Dr. Rushing completely qualified to testify as to the nursing homes. So on the issue of qualification as to the nursing homes, that claim, that's all we have to meet for vicarious liability in the context of the management companies. So once we meet that part of the element, the report was found sufficient as to at least Arlington Villa. Because one theory of liability, if you plead enough information within a report on one theory of liability, the entire action must survive. So as to the first entity, the entire action, which is owned by Pinnacle, the entire action should have survived without any further question or concern by Judge Chupp. However, he wanted additional information, so we amended that report. In June, the trial court found that the amended report was sufficient. So this case is actually that matters on appeal and before this court because the defendants challenged the appropriateness of Judge Chupp's ruling in sustaining or in denying the motions to dismiss. At a minimum, Your Honors, under Scoresby, the only things that have to be established are three. We must, to allow 30 days to cure, we must serve the report by the deadline. It must contain an opinion of a qualified expert, which it certainly does, at least to the nursing homes. And then we have to implicate the defendant's conduct. With those three points made, the court must grant 30 days to amend. Judge Chupp failed to do that and erred, and that was an abuse of discretion, and we'd ask that this court grant leave at least 30 days to amend. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Smith, Mr. Stewart, and Ms. Bunn. We appreciate all of your arguments today in connection with this case. We appreciate all the work you all also have done in connection with all the briefing. Your case is submitted, and you are now excused.